Calls met and defeated the best of his crop. He gave Bodemeister 5 pounds, then he beat him. He defeated Union Rags and Paintner, Hansen and Doolahan and Gemologist. In fact, he defeated every horse he ever faced, and he earned over $1 million. And what a pedigree. Creative Calls is by a grade one winner, a millionaire, and champion sire. And he's out of a grade one winner, grade one producer, and a millionaire. Now throw in superb confirmation, and you have the total package. By champion sire Giants Causeway, Creative Calls is out of Dream of Summer, who you may recall defeated DeShotto in the grade one Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park. You're invited to inspect Creative Calls at Mr. and Mrs. Brereton and C. Jones Airdrie Stud, where he's to stand his first season at stud for $15,000 due when the foal stands in nurses. See the website at airdreestud.com. And remember, the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit.
Horse Tales with Ursel Ellis, the horse capital of the world, bluegrass country. Horse Tales is all about the horses, the people, and the history of the thoroughbred industry. Now here's your host, Ursel Ellis.
Good morning. It's a messy day today, and Susie, be careful going down the hill because I almost busted my can just a minute ago. All right. It's a little.
There you go. Extreme sport.
It's a little slick out here. Coming up the hill to the clocker stand, and then the steps, and my lovely wife went out there and. We didn't have a show, anything to chip off the ice with, but what'd you use?
A dustpan.
And
being a lawyer.
Yeah. Anyway, she got it cleaned off, and it's kind of a mess out here today. The track is, we've had, I think, 6 workers all day, and 3 of them are too slow to turn in. So that kind of tells you what kind of shape we're in out here.
Yeah, when the horses gallop over the snow, they grind the moisture and the snow into the track, which is not good.
If a body had a chance, on
a perfect thing, you wouldn't want them to go on that track that day, but they got to get out.
Yeah. And a lot of people galloped on it. You could gallop on it and everything. So,
yeah, it's like mud with little snow mixed in is what it is.
A lot of people, yes, it worked yesterday. I think we had about 50 works.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and they saw the handwriting on the wall as far as the track conditions are going to be like today. But it's open. That damn Harold.
I know. That's what we say. That damn Harold.
All right. Well, we've had a really good month so far out of here as far as winning races. We've had in the month of December with limited opportunities as far as running. We've had 53 winners, 12 since last week's show, and the trainers of winners since last week's show are Gary Skinner. I wonder if he's related to Tommy Skinner. Tommy trains out here, and it's kind of an unusual name, Skinner. I'm going to have to ask Tommy. I won't ask Gary because he may not claim Tommy.
There you go.
I've known Tommy for years and years and years. He's a good horseman. Well, anyway, Gary Skinner, Kellen Gorder, one with Heavenly Light, Brian Michael, one with Don't Surprise Me. All these wins, incidentally, except one, were at Turfway. Robert Sturgeon, that's Bobby. There are two Sturgeons running, one runs under the name of Bobby Sturgeon, and he's not from here. And the other one is Robert Sturgeon, and he does train from here. And as Tom Bergen says, well, we have the real one here. So
there you go.
Laura Bielmer won one with Bandy's Girl. Alan Krupper won with Swiss Royalty. All these are Turfway. Luis Hurado won with Seamstress. And Luis just sent down 2 big boxes of donuts.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God, they're so good.
I haven't had one.
Well, you better hurry.
Well,
This is the end of the, I keep saying is I finish off the cookies and I finish off the Baileys and I finish off the pies. This is the end for a year.
Well, that was on the 26th that Luis won, but he won another one yesterday. I'll get to that. Wayne Mogie won with Heart of Class. John Booker won with In My Book. Greg Birchall won with Brilliant Autumn, and Greg shipped Brilliant Autumn all the way to the fairgrounds and won a feature race down at the fairgrounds with her, and she's back up here now. Luis Hurado, who brought the donuts, won last night, yesterday, they ran during the day, with Why Bother Me, and Byron G., better known as Scooter Hughes, won with Macho Matt. at Turfway yesterday. So that's 11 winners since last week. What are we doing today? Well, Dr. Mariah Shubrick is coming in.
What a sweetie.
Yeah, she was in here with
her. I got to talk to her. She's a sweetheart. She's, what a nice girl.
She came by here with her family. And
all her kit and kin came down to see them because they just moved here.
Yeah.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Husband is real tall. He looks like a basketball player. I'm going to have to ask him.
He's the Olympic rower.
Oh, he's an Olympic rower.
Yeah, and I think his father was an Olympic rower.
Is that right?
Silver and a bronze, or I don't know, Matt. You know, Matt talks to his hat half the time, Matt Howard.
Yeah, they're real good friends of Matt Howard.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have
Rachel.
To get the real Crystal. Crystal.
Yeah.
Crystal.
What did I say?
Rachel.
Oh, Crystal. Well, my goodness. Better known as Dutcher's mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you spell Ursel?
Do I have to?
I forgot how. I'm forgetting everything these days. So anyway,
that's all right.
Of course, Crystal works over there
at Rude and Riddle.
At Rude and Riddle, and that's where Mariah Shubrick, Dr. Shubrick's going.
She went to New Bolton. They came here from New Bolton.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. They said Pennsylvania, and I said New Bolton, and she said yes.
Oh, okay. I think she's a graduate of Penn. Well, no, that's Matt again. Telling
Matt again,
Penn.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, you got to get it from the horse's mouth instead of the horse's patood.
Michael Blowen, we're going to call him here in just a few minutes and see what Michael has to say. He's not coming in today. Neither is Doug Byard, and we're going to call him.
They got more sense than we do.
Yeah. And Michael, if you're listening, please don't let that answering service screw us up again.
Yeah.
All right.
Put a hex on you.
I don't think Steve Moody will be doing anything today because there's no stakes races down fairgrounds, and he just likes to talk about stakes races. And
you'd think he'd like to talk about the game, the big game coming up.
I'm afraid that's going to be ugly.
Hope not.
I hope not. But
I saved the little Baileys, the end of the Baileys for the game.
Okay. Of course, we have Jackie's announcements. I'm going to have to read some Joe Palmer today. I picked out a story or two. And we're still looking at three-year-olds in 1957. I'm going to talk about Clem and son of Shannon II and won a really game horse and a decent kind of a sire, too. I bought a yearling by Clem at one time. And paid $2,000 for him out of the Eastern sale up there. I think he was a Virginia bred, and sold him for $10,000. So I did real good. Won his first start. And horse, what did I name that colt?
Cadiddle Hopper.
Oh, I could have Clem Cadiddle Hopper. Yeah, that would have been a heck of a name, wouldn't it?
I know.
I was too stupid to do that. I named him. I can't think of that colt's name now. See, I'm getting so I can't remember anything. Anyway, so I'm going to take a break here, and then we're going to try to see if we can get in touch.
I did want to mention that, you know, we've had a nice Christmas, family in and all this and that kind of stuff, but we have a real good friend, Terry Tubbs. And Terry, for instance, yesterday I looked down at the sink, and I'm looking at my feet in front of the sink, and they're filling with water. Oh, my God. So, anyway, one thing. Anyway, Terry came over yesterday and fixed that. But what I wanted to mention about Terry ran hither and yon before Christmas to collect money for Toys for Tots. And he collected enough money for 20 bicycles for needy kids. And I thought that was pretty darn nice.
Yeah.
He's just a big softy.
Yeah.
You never know. So, but anyway, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, well, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty, let me take a little break here, and then we'll see if we can get. We got a Sally in there. We're going to try to get a hold of Michael, and if I get his answering service, I'm going to shoot him. Well, Blame was the number one ranked first crop weanling sale sire in 2011, when 13 sold for an average of $136,154. He is siring superb individuals. Eclipse Award winner Blame won 7 stakes and over $4,368,000. He won 6 graded stakes, 3 grade 1, the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Whitney, and the Stephen Foster. He descends from a sire line generally considered to be our greatest source of classic stamina. Arch. Chris S. Roberto. Hail to Reason. His dam is Libel, a stakes class daughter of the outstanding Seeking the Gold by Mr. Prospector. His second dam is one of 155 stakes winners by the great Nijinsky II. And the female family has already given us such great sires as Nureyev and Sadler's Wells. Blame stands for $30,000 due in the fold stands and nurses. He stands at Claiborne Farm. That's the home also of Algorithms, Eddington, First Samurai, Flatter, Horse Greeley, Parading, Stroll, Trap Shot, and War Front. Inquiries to Bernie Sams and see the website at ClaibornFarm.com.
Sally Van Services, you ship your horse, whether it's across the county or across the country. When you load your horse into a Sally van, you can depend on the fact that the person behind the wheel is one of the best in the business. The folks at Sally Van Service wouldn't have it any other way, and that's why for more than half a century, Sally Vans has been the safest way to the winner's circle.
Well, Empire Maker ranked number one on the 2012 sire list by North American Earnings. He is no longer available for stud duties in the USA, but his two best sons, Bodemeister and Pioneer of the Dial, are, and they both stand at Windstar Farm. Bodemeister won the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby, and few will forget his front-running seconds in both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, retired with earnings of over $1,300,000. Pioneer of the Nile won Grade 1 stakes at both 2 and 3, and, like Bodemeister, he ran second in the Kentucky Derby. He retired with earnings of more than $1,634,000. Bodemeister is to stand his first season at stud in 2013 for $30,000 due in the fold stands and nurses. Pioneer of the Nile stands for $15,000 due in the fold stands and nurses, and it is noteworthy that he was the second-ranked freshman sire, sales sire in 2012, second only to yet another young stallion standing at Windstar Farm, Colonel John. Windstar is also the home of Distorted Humor, sire Jimmy Creek, winner opening day at Santa Anita of the Grade 1 Malibu Stakes. You're invited to inspect the Windstar stallions. Just contact Jerry Duffy, Leanna Packett, and Chance Tim at 859-873-1717 and see the website at windstarfarm.com. All righty. Well, I think I have Michael Blowen on the phone with me. So at least I heard him coughing in the background. Michael, how are you?
Good, Ursula. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. And what's going on with you this morning? How are things over at Old Friends?
It's fabulous. It looks beautiful. The horses are rolling in the snow like they got a Christmas present.
Yeah, well,
having a great old time.
Yeah, how much snow did you? We got about 3 inches down in Bourbon County where we live.
That's what it looks like here. It's heavy and wet, and it's starting to melt already. But the horses are having a good time, and we're having a good time, and that's what it's about, right?
I assume that's what it's about, having a good time. I'm glad you didn't come in a way, because Doc's not coming in either. I warned him off the facilities here at the Clocker Stand. The walk up the hill here, I've just about busted my behind coming up the hills, and the steps were a mess. So everybody would have been better off staying home today. But
Winter. You know, it's winter. This is what we go to expect. You know.
Yeah, I had to get up earlier this morning and hay before I left. Throw some hay outside, and everything.
You know, my idol. I can't tell you, you're my idol. It's unbelievable.
Oh, get out of here, Mom. I'm his idol. He says. that's I-D-L-E. Is that the way you spell it, I-D-L-E? I'm kind of neutral, if that's what you mean.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we lost my good friend Jack Klugman last week, which is really too bad. I have one funny story about this guy. You know, Jack Klugman, of course, played Oscar Madison on The Odd Couple and was Quincy Medical Examiner and all that. He loved to bet horses, and he had horses. The first horse he ever got was Jacqueline Klugman. I think he thought that was going to be the way it was going to be the rest of his life, but apparently he chased that dream for a long time. But when he came to Boston when I was riding up there for the Globe, and he was in for a revival of The Odd Couple, and he was playing Oscar Madison to Tony Randall's Felix Unger. And when we went and talked, I had a racing form with me, and he freaked out. He says, you go to the track? He says, yeah, what's the track around here? I said, Suffolk. He said, okay, I'm going to work this out. And every morning, he and Tony Randall would have this run-through of the Odd Couple, bone up on it a little bit and tweak it a little. And then they'd get done around 11 o'clock, and I'd pick them up. And every day, every afternoon, we went to the track.
Oh, that's fun.
Now, before we left, Tony Randall would see us sneaking out the back door, and he'd wag his finger at us and go, now, boys, you know you shouldn't be going there.
They're pretty good guys.
Oh, great. And Klugman was nice. He got his picture taken with everybody. He signed programs. He was a terrible handicapper. And one of the people that was a terrible handicapper, he was too impatient. He just loved to just, well, who's the leading jockey? How much does this horse earn? Who's the leading trainer? Mm-hmm. Who's that? Hey, that lady, her husband's a jockey, right? Oh, this is funny. So Carl Gambardella's wife was a real Jack Klugman fan, and she would come by every day to say hello. And he said, Jack said to me, her husband's a leading jockey? Yeah. Well, go ask her which horses are going to win at his today. What's the matter with you?
What?
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, well, that he was a good actor, too. He played, what was that series that he played in? He played on TV other than that one. Later on, it was some kind of a...
Yeah, Quincy Medical Examiner.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I didn't get to see that too much. You know how I am into TV. I am.
I know you don't even like doctors on TV.
No. I only like doctors when I need one.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Ursula, we're working on getting another horse.
Who are you working on?
A nice California horse named Disturbing the Peace.
Disturbing the Peace. Now, that doesn't ring a bell.
Well, he's the only horse in history to win the Grade 3 Pat O'Brien twice out there.
Okay.
And he won another couple of nice grade stakes races. He's finished. He's out. He's in Florida now. And Bill Kasner called us about him. A friend of Bill Kasner's has him, and we're going to try and get him here in the next few weeks.
Oh, okay. Was he running down there and he's through, or what? What happened?
You know, I'm not exactly sure what the story is. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Well, Bill will get him for you.
Bill's great.
Yeah,
Bill's also very generous.
I assume that he is a gelding.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, okay.
Me too. I'm making that assumption too.
Is he a California bred? What's he by? Do you know the pedigree or anything?
No, but I'll have him next week.
Okay.
I'll get more details next week.
All righty.
More to come.
More. The story to be continued.
Yeah.
But wait.
Yeah.
And then we got all our horses' birthdays on Tuesday, so everybody's turning another year.
Yeah. I'm glad mine isn't Tuesday.
Clever Alamont's 31.
31. Well, that old boy we've got will be 28.
That's pretty good.
Boy, he's a young 28. We've had him up the last couple of nights because of the weather, you know. And, of course, we keep a rain sheet on him all the time because, you know, but
he doesn't have much.
He doesn't have a whole lot of coat. And but the biggest thing about him is his appetite. I mean, my golly, he eats. And, of course, we feed him those special-made pellets that they make down at McCauley Brothers. At
Longevity.
Longevity is because they dissolve in a horse's mouth, and his teeth are leaving something to be desired, I tell you.
Yeah, a lot of the ones that we have here, you know, the teeth are an issue because they're old, yeah.
Well, you know, if you can shake loose for a buck, you know, that longevity really works because it's in a pellet form, you know, but they melt. As soon as they go into the mouth, they dissolve. So they don't lose anything, you know. And I noticed...
That sounds great.
I noticed that a couple of our other old retirees out there are kind of... We're going to have to get our dentist in to work
on
them.
Tell them about the people from Nova Scotia. They were nice.
Oh, yeah.
Did they come out?
Did they come by? A couple from Nova Scotia?
Yes.
I think they did.
I didn't do the tour, but I think they did, yes.
Oh, good. Well, they wanted to see this old horse because he was supposedly the last pole son of Secretariat. And 28 years old, he may be the last one, period. Who knows, you know.
Well, we got one here.
Oh, how old is he?
Oh, let's see. Chinner's Way, 26.
Oh, yeah. We got to be.
I know he's the oldest. We just have the best.
Yeah, well, there's no two ways about that. that Tenor's Way was Tenor's Way was a really top racehorse.
Yeah, he was really amazing.
This horse won one race during his life.
Is Tenor's Way a stallion?
And he won at a track that you probably don't know. Remember Mobile?
Oh wow,
Birmingham.
No, Birmingham. Well, I had the right state.
Alabama.
Birmingham. Yeah. They ran one.
They had that indoor race course for a while?
No, it wasn't indoor.
It wasn't?
No, I don't think it was indoor. It didn't need to be indoor down there, you know. I mean, it was.
I know it didn't need to be, but they did something strange, like run mechanical jockeys. They did some weird thing down there.
No, they had a regular meeting.
Well, you look it up. You'll see. I'm going to look it up for next week. We're going to look it up. They did some odd things there.
Now, this was back, I think, in about 1991, because a good friend of mine, Herb Jones, took a string of horses down to Birmingham. Everybody thought it was going to be great.
Yep.
And Herb let me know right away. He says, these people down here don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
He says, they don't. You know, you go to bet on something, and you want to bet $2 to win on somebody on a horse, you know, and you almost had to go in and push the button for them. They just didn't know what they were doing, the mutual clerks and everything. And he saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a collector's item for there, by the way. He gave me.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, Herb gave me a little money clip. It says, I think it says Birmingham Turf Club on it. You know?
Very nice. Was there any money in the clip?
No. You don't know Herb as well as I do.
He could at least throw $2 in there so you could know how to use it.
Yeah, buddy. Herb's a great guy. He brought me by some country ham earlier this week, and that's a bit. I don't know where he gets it, but it's the best country ham. It's not salty or anything, you know. And I ate half of it before I got home in a truck.
I love it. I love it.
All right, my friend.
Ursula, it's great talking to you. Have a wonderful New Year's. I can't wait to see you next week.
Well, happy New Year's to you, and hopefully everything will be in to Diane and everybody works out there, all your volunteers and so forth. Got a great bunch.
Yeah, we're very lucky. Yep.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. All right, well, we'll talk to you. We'll see you next week, and take my advice and be good.
I'll try.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much, Ursula.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, First Defense is the sire in his first crop of Dundonnell, winner in Great Britain of the Grade 3 Acom Stakes, second by head in the Grade 2 Champagne Stakes, and fourth of 14 in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Stakes, beating some two lengths in his only start in the USA. Dundonnell is one of 8 first crop winners by First Defense, and 6 others have placed, and they're doing so at major tracks at Keeneland, at Belmont, Woodbine, Delaware, Saratoga, Churchill Downs, in Great Britain, and in Japan. First Defense broke his maiden as a 2-year-old by 8 1/4 lengths at Belmont Park. Then he came into his own at 3 4, winning the Grade 1 Forego, the Grade 3 Jiper Stakes, and Long Branch Breeders' Cup Stakes. He finished second in the Grade 1 King's Bishop and also in the Grade 2 Alfred G. Vanderbilt. Of course, that's at Saratoga. He had sensational speed. He sprinted 7 furlongs and won 20 4 at Belmont Park, and won 21 2 at Saratoga, and won 22 1 at Churchill Downs. By Unbridled Song, Son of Unbridled. First Defense is out of Empire Maker's half-sister, Honest Lady, a Grade 1 Stakes winner by Seattle Slough. Of course, Empire Maker from the same sire line by Unbridled, and he is, although he's not standing in this country, he ranks number 1 on the North American sire list by North American earnings. First Defense stands for $7,500 live foal at Judmont Farm, the home also of Mizzen Mast, the only sire of 2 winners of Grade 1 Breeders' Cup races in 2012. Inquiries to Garrett O'Rourke or Aaron Fry, and see the website at judmont.com.
To succeed at the races, then banish.
Sorry, find the phone.
Noon until 5 at Crestwood Farm. The Crestwood Stallions for 2013 are a country day, get stormy, no biz like show biz, noble causeway, taste of paradise, and tis deja vu. Country Day and Get Stormy are new additions to the stallion ranks at Crestwood Farm. Get Stormy is a multiple Grade 1 stakes winner of over $1,600,000 by Stormy Atlantic, who ranks 10th on the 2012 leading sires list by North American earnings and among those now at stud in the USA. Stormy Atlantic stud fee for 2013 is $30,000. Country Day is a fast Grade 2 stakes winner of over $500,000 by champion sprinter Sprightstown, who ranked number one on the 2012 sire list by North American earnings. Sprightstown stands for $60,000. Both Country Day and Get Stormy are to stand their first seasons at stud next year, and both are standing for fees of $5,000 due in the foal stands and nurses. Contact the farm, 859-252-3770, and check the website at crestwoodfarm.com. We'll see you at the farm on January 6th. While you're there, be sure to register to win a free 2013 season to a Crestwood Farm stallion. That's a stallion open house on Sunday, January 6th from noon until 5 at Crestwood Farm. All righty. Well, I've got Dr. Doug Byer on the phone. Doug, I know you're there because I can hear you breathing.
Yeah. Well, I guess I have to know, did you get Michael first?
Yeah, I got a hold of Michael.
He
couldn't make it either.
I'll be darned.
No, give him a call. You might give him a call and he'll tell you why.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll just pass on that, and you be sure you give him a call and
check
check on him. And I'm glad that you didn't come out here today. Walking up to the clocker stand, I almost busted my can, and the steps were solid ice. So I tell you, it's a mess out here. The roads aren't bad, the main mm-hmm. roads, but the parking lot here and the access to the clocker stand is pretty rough. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're there and I'm not.
Well. Well, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. I thought the one of the things that I was kind of touching on, which is to kind of digress from medical issues, but the, kind of the history of veterinary medicine have been highlighted recently, and of course horses are premier in history, but they weren't veterinary. They were just blacksmiths and everybody else, and people who enjoyed working with the animals, but it was a hodgepodge until 1860, that a guy named Francois Leopold came from France and migrated here as a veterinary professional. But there weren't really any veterinary professionals anyway. But he was a lone wolf. But he began founding veterinary profession. And so he started that. And all the species became organized. And he worked through Cornell. And so he was pivotal to get things done, but he was a guy, I think he was kind of an obstinate guy, had to be kind of abrasive, and he kind of ran things as a lone wolf, and so the veterinary profession kind of just stayed that way till about 1950. And so he promoted a lot of education, and he wanted to do this and do that, but he didn't seem to able to keep the mustard polished all the time. So it failed off and on. And so the veterinary profession kind of tried to become a classroom, but it was held back periodically. He started meat inspection. He started efforts to make a national examination for veterinarians. So you have to take an exam. But he never really, he got it off the ground, but it was never solid. And so it just, historically, he was on the right track, but it was, he was famous for that, but he was kind of just, the rest of the veterinarians didn't really follow. So anyway, that's kind of a historical approach. He recognized working with Dr. Salmon for Salmonella back in the 1800s, and so there was some camaraderie, but it really wasn't across the board until about 1915. But anyway, it was an interesting approach, and it got the veterinary profession off the ground.
Come a long way, hadn't it?
Yeah, and it stuck eventually, but it's kind of interesting that Cornell was where he wound up as a teacher. But
I bet he taught Ed Fallon.
Yeah. they produced a few veterinarians. I think they tried to make a graduating class, and they had 11 of them in 1900. But it still was not a legitimate thing. So New York was the only place in the country that someone could become a bona fide veterinarian. So if you came to Cornell, I mean, I came to Kentucky, you were just another blacksmith or two dentists. You know, there wasn't any credential, and there really wasn't for quite a long time.
Yeah. Now, Doug, where did Dr. Charlie Haggard go? He was in Canada somewhere, wasn't he?
Yeah, the senior. Fallon was Canadian,
mm-hmm.
And as far as what he would have said, I would guess back in those days, it would be like all the others. You were recognized as being a veterinarian, or you could be a blacksmith,
uh-huh. Yeah.
And still recognized for the same way. Back in those days, he might have, he probably was just kind of like a good old boys club that started a veterinary practice.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
really, it wasn't, I would think Dr. Fallon would not have been any different than anybody. He just wore that lapel as more of a professional image.
Yeah. You mean Dr. Haggard, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so this doctor, the French veterinarian, he was very rigid and wanted a higher standard. So he wouldn't let the veterinarians mix with the other people. Just had to be strictly a surgeon or something that he recognized.
Oh, okay.
And I think that held the veterinary game back a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah. Doc, have you... go ahead.
I was going to say, there's an old book I got that where they changed it to a journal, and they called it the American Veterinary Review, which then later became the American Veterinary Medical Association. But it was, again, 1920, something like that, before it really became recognized.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's interesting that the people whose personalities dominate, he got a lot of things done, but at the same time, held things back.
Yeah. Don, have you ever seen that TV series, All Creatures Great and Small?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the vet that was in that, who wrote, really, I think they took that from, was a veterinarian in Great Britain, and he's written. I'm reading a book right now of dog stories that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And have you read that?
I have, but it's been a ways back, and he had a whole series of those. Books.
Yeah, well, we're reading one. This is all dog stories because although he treated large animals too.
Right.
These are all real short stories about different dogs and things and experiences that they had. I'm reading that now. If you haven't read it, you'd like to read it again, I'd be glad to, after I finish it, I'll drop it off over there.
Well, we'll get together and get some more reading done. I packed up so much stuff when I was at the hospital that I had more to read than I could get to. But, he did a tremendous, he did what Dr. Leopold, the French guy, this veterinarian, was good to the people. He was a social, so he accomplished a tremendous amount.
Yeah.
And produced him. Of course, a year was later, so that, back in the 1940s.
Yeah.
And now I'm drawing a blank on his name, but it's interesting that a lot of the, around 1904 was when veterinarians considered the horse as your bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And then they used them for labor and everything else, but they were the horse for the bread and butter. So the car came along, and there's literature about people being anti. If you owned a car, you were abandoning the horse. So there was a lot of territory.
Yeah.
That people didn't want to. If a veterinarian got a car,
right,
and it was 1904 or 1905, then they would get chastised.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Doc?
Yeah, that's
are you there? Oh, we got cut off.
Well, anyway.
No, here we are. He wrote, that guy's name was James Wright, I believe.
Alfred, they called him.
And everybody called him Alfred Wright, and he wrote under the name of James Herriot.
Yeah.
The one I was talking, yeah.
That was his pen name.
Yeah, yeah. And he could write. He was a wonderful writer.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, I don't know how good a vet he was, but he was a damn good writer.
Oh, I think he was good. I think
for his day, huh?
Yeah, I think he was hands-on. And I think some of the ones that were too academic were good at maybe talking about doing a surgical procedure, but they weren't too much for going out and handling the animal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there was a lot of jealousy, but it all kind of got put together and made the profession what it is today. And we got to keep it moving in the right direction.
All right. We have a new vet on the show today. Dr. Mariah Shobrick, Dr. Mariah Shobrick. Mariah is her first name, and we just met her this morning, but she's going to be on the show today. She's a reproductive vet she's gone to work for Rudin Riddle. And she's going to be on the show at the top of the hour, so.
Oh, great, yeah. Great.
Pretty girl. Doc, you ought to be. You should have been here. Well, listen, we're gonna let you go. I gotta pay some bills.
See you next week.
And we'll see you next week, my friend.
Okay, I'll talk to you. Hopefully we'll get ourselves out of the cave dwelling.
Okay.
Where we can get some eyeballs.
You can come out of there on a grapevine. Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right, Doc. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Mustin Farr was the size of 13 foals in his first crop. 9 have started with 5 winners and 3 others to place. And his 9 starters have won a place in 29 races, with 1 to place in stakes. So if you're looking for a reasonably priced sire that can put you in the winner's circle, consider Mustin Farr. He was a frequent visitor to the winner's circle himself. In fact, he won graded stakes at Keeneland and Belmont, won an allowance company at Gulfstream, broke his maiden as a 2-year-old at Aqueduct. At the end of his career, he had won a place in 9 stakes, all 9 graded stakes, including the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Breeders' Cup Handicap. He competed on dirt, grass, and artificial. Sidebun bridled and out of a daughter of champion height of fashion. Mustin Farr stands for $2,000 live foal. He stands at Shadwell Farm. Inquiries to stand manager Kent Barnes. And see the website at shadwellfarm.com. Well, I want to talk about my good friend Ralph Quillen, who I'm sure had a Merry Christmas and wants to wish everyone a Happy New Year. And Quillen Tack and Leather, they make and ship out more halters. Well, I don't know how many they sell in this country, but I know that they ship out over 17,000 halters a year. I mean, I probably make damn near that many right here in Kentucky, as far as that goes.
Shoot, yeah.
And I know that's where we go now. I'm going to warn them right now that we've got a couple that need repair, and they do a wonderful job with that, too.
They certainly do.
Yeah, and we
like
always...
Like new.
I don't know.
You can take them in there all crummy and rotty, and God knows what's stuck to them, and they don't say a word. They just go down there and fix them.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about...
I don't know if you're supposed to rinse them off or not, but I try not to.
We've got these old horses out there, a couple of these old geldings, and they're constantly undressing each other. And we got one out there right now with no halter. I had to take off of him. It was hanging around his neck. So
no, we got about 6 of them. He's gone through about half a dozen.
So, Ralph, here we come. And Quillen Tack and Leather is in Bourbon County, thank goodness. I don't have to drive too far. And if you're coming in from the election area, you go to the 3rd stop right and look to your left. It's right across from Ken's New Market. You can't miss it. It's a great gift shop and great leather works and great people to do business with. And they've got just about everything in there that you need, and worm medicine and so forth. It's Quillen.com, Quillin.com is his website. And you can go on Facebook at Quillen Leather. How about that? And Ralph's on Facebook a lot. He and Jackie could keep up with each other that way. But it's a great tack shop, best in Central Kentucky. And make sure that you go down there and see him. We got a good gift shop there too. Well, Kitten's Joy, who's a top sire, Magna graduate, and
Roses in May and Grace Hall and Colonel John and Einstein and Badge of Silver stands now at Stud down and doing very well down at Airdrie Stud and Any Given Saturday, who seems like he's doing very well too. Spitestown, and of course you know how he's doing. Well, what do they all have in common? Well, they all came to Kismark to correct a problem at some time during their careers. And the list of well-known horses that also came there is too long for me to recite here, believe me. Kismark, in case you don't know where it is, it's just a couple of miles from Keeneland. It's on Shannon Run Road. You go toward Versailles from Keeneland, and you know where the castle is. Well, you turn left, and just go up there maybe three-quarters of a mile on the left, and you'll see their sign. And it's a great facility. They've got a variety of tools at their disposal to benefit the horse that are just not available anywhere else. And they have a staff that's well-schooled in how to use those tools. And veterinarians all over Kentucky, especially here in central Kentucky, utilize the Kismark facilities. And as a matter of fact, every horse that comes to Kismark has their own vet. So if you stay around there long enough, you'll probably meet half the veterinarians in Kentucky. They open their doors to horses that are critically injured, to those that just need a little freshening. That's what Grace Hall was there for. Cost is extremely reasonable, and they've got some things there. I was particularly impressed with the cold saltwater spa there. And when I say cold, I mean cold. 35 degrees, and it comes out of jets on the horse's legs, and it reduces swelling immediately, inflammation of the limbs. And I'll tell you what, it was impressive. They've got, they've got an aqua tread and a swimming pool and a freestyle walkers and indoor walking and jogging rings. And there's a vibrating platform which was developed by the space program, believe it or not. And it enhances the hoof growth and circulation, strengthens bones. You've got a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, turnout paddocks, round pens, you name it. So to learn more about Kismark, give them a call. 859-873-9955. Or check the website. I'm going to spell Kismark for you because it's a little different spelling. It's KESMARC.com. Kismark.com. Great facility. All righty. Let me see here. Let me take care of my good friend. Dave Schweitzer over to KTA and Toba, and they like to announce the winners of stakes over the weekend, the previous weekend. Let's see, there were two graded stakes, and one grade one, and that was the cash call for Tourity out at Hollywood Park with a $750,000 pot, and the winner of Violence was bred and by Dale Ridge Farm. They've raised a lot of runners over there. As a matter of fact, Violence defeated Fury Kapkori, and he was raised over Diamond A Racing. So that's a 1-2 in the Grade 1 cash call for Tootie out at Hollywood Park. We're foaled in Kentucky. The only other one, greatest stake, was an Irish bred. We'll skip that then. Let's see. The Willow on the Move stakes at Law went to Winning Image. Winning Image was bred by Dreamfields and Don Brady. The Harlan's Holiday stakes, named after that wonderful son of Harlan that stands over at Windstar Farm, was won by Cassaba, and he was bred by Kent and Sarah Ramsey. And I believe that might have been just about it. No, there's a couple more. We've had two since then, though. I'm only saving them for next week. Two of the three graded stakes down at opening day at Santa Anita were won by Kentucky Breds. The Oakland Stakes at Golden Gate was Gig Harbor, bred by Anne Marie Farm. And the Prairie Bayou Stakes at Turfway Park went to Night Party. And Night Party was bred by Camellia Casby. So, pretty good weekend. Not many stakes. It gets a little light during the summer, winter months, as I should say. Let me do something for Spendthrift, and then Jackie, if you would
ready to do an announcement or two to round
sure.
out?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, Medaglia d'Oro has sired 8 Grade 1 stakes winners, including a Horse of the Year. One of those 8 Grade 1 winners is Warrior's Reward, described by True Nicks as the fastest son of Medaglia d'Oro. Warrior's Reward sprinted 7 furlongs and won 21 in chains at 3 different tracks, Churchill Downs, Aqueduct, Gulfstream Park. He won the Grade 1 Carter Handicap and won 21-3. And he won a place in 6 graded stakes at distances from 6 furlongs to a mile and an eighth at the major eastern tracks, Saratoga, Belmont, Keeneland, Churchill Downs, Aqueduct. He posted a 113 Bayer as a 3-year-old. That was the fastest of the year for his age group, along with Quality Road and I Want Revenge. The first foals by Warrior's Reward will be yearlings next year in 2013, and he's got the numbers in his favor. He was bred to 252 mares in his first 2 seasons at stud. Stands a Spendthrift farm, and keep in mind that all 3 of the Spendthrift sires with first crops to race in 2012, Into Mischief, Notional, Tis Wonderful, have sired stakes winners. Warrior's Reward stands for $15,000, due when the foal stands and nurses. Inquiries to Ken Wilkins, Des Dempsey, Sean Fell, Mark Toothacker, R. Ned Toffee at 859-294-0030. And see the website at SpendthriftFarm.com. Whoops, something else coming up right now? Oh, yeah, my good friends at Luberson, which I took this morning, as a matter of fact.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so they make it for humans and horses, of course. Lubricin and Reborn are 2 products, really the really top-notch products. They're both developed by Dr. Steve Alday and endorsed by many owners, trainers, and veterinarians. And both, incidentally, they're all natural and they're test-free. You don't have to worry about it when they go into the spit box. They're going to get through with flying colors. Lubricin, to put it mildly, it sustains the integrity of the joint fluid and can help reduce the need for costly and painful hyaluronic acid injections. And you know those things are expensive. Trainers that use Lubricin on a regular basis include Todd Pletcher and Tony Dutrall, Jerry Hollendorfer, Michael Maker, to mention just a few. Jimmy Corrigan, who's is a 20% win trainer out here at the Thoroughbred Center, uses it regularly too. And you know the Irish, they like to take their best hole, and that's what you get with Lubricin. They have it for humans too. I use it, Jackie uses it, and it helps me, it helps Jackie, swears by it. And we're going to have to go get some, by the way.
I know.
Yeah.
We're about out.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Ralph Quillen, and I should have followed up on that to sell it. But right now you can buy Lubricin and Reborn also over at KBC or at Horse Sense down in Versailles. So you can buy it right there. Reborn is the other product I was talking about. It's 100% sterile, whole concentrated natural bovine colostrum. Safe and easy to use as a dietary supplement for horses of all ages, starting with foals. And it strengthens the foal's immune system immensely while nursing on the mare because of its high concentration of growth factors and antibodies. Actually, it supports immune functions in horses of all ages, thus providing a quicker recovery from physical challenges. And so that's what Reborn is all about. And it delivers. So for more information about Lubricin and Reborn, call 800-901-9498. Type in Lubricin, Lubricyn, or Reborn, Reborne, in your computer to find out where you can buy it and recommended dosages. And once again, then get it over at KBC or in Horse Sense for sales. And remember the names, Lubricin and Reborn. All righty. I think I'm all right now. Am I? Oh, yeah, I got to do pin up. All righty. Well, last Saturday at the fairgrounds, the Sugar Bowl Stakes was won by Tour Guide, a 2-year-old colt by Broken Vow. Tour Guide is the 19th 2012 stakes winner by Broken Vow. Only Giants Causeway, fee $85,000, and Sprightstown, fee $60,000, have sired more. Broken Vow stands for a fee of $25,000 live foal. Tour Guide was bred in Kentucky by Gary and Mary West. Went into the Sugar Bowl as a heavy favorite after an impressive win at Churchill Downs. That was on November 24.
In addition to his 19 stakes winners, Broken Vow has sired 9 others to place in stakes. That's 28 stakes horses this year. 5 of those stakes winners, incidentally, were 2-year-olds. In fact, Broken Vow has sired well over 100 stakes horses to date. That's why his 2012 sales reeling sold for up to $500,000. In fact, he was represented by 22 individuals to bring more than $100,000 during the year. Broken Vow, a son of Unbridled, stands at Pin Oak Stud with the stallions Cowboy Cal and Sky Classic. Inquiries to Clifford Berry or Nancy Stevens to see the website at pinoakstud.com. All right. I'll be right with you. Sit down, Doc.
All right.
I feel funny calling you Doc.
Yeah, call me Mariah.
All right. I'll be with you in just a second.
All right.
We're going to take it up to the top of the hour here. And
say when.
Go.
Go. Okay. Crestwood Farm is having a stallion open house Sunday, January 6th. That's a week from tomorrow. Introducing 2 new sires. Got Stormy and Country Day. You can register to win a free 2013 season to Country Day. Get Stormy, No Biz Like Showbiz, Noble Causeway, Taste of Paradise, and Tis Deja Vu. If you want to call him, it's 252-3770, but we usually show up around noon and get some free eats. And
boy, I tell you, they had good barbecue last night.
I know, so. And they have a tent.
I'm going to leave the barbecue in there.
I know. That's exactly right. We'll be there because it's – and then they bring the stallions out one at a time, and it's fun to look at them. Oh, our friend Martha Bennett Stiles' new book has been selected by the Kentucky Book Fair. It's going to be featured at the National Book Festival on the Mall in Washington, D.C. next September. This is super. It's called Sailing to Freedom. Martha writes children's books, not baby.
Right down on my level.
Yeah, that will get you one. It's called Sailing to Freedom. And good for Martha. She's an extremely nice person. Sally Van, one of our sponsors, of course, has been hauling horses since Mahuba, I guess, before Mahuba.
You know who Mahuba was? That's Man of War's dam.
Ah, there you go.
Since they first decided to haul horses on trucks.
That's when Bobby Maxwell had them over there.
Yeah.
Bobby's my age, so you'd probably be about right. You know?
Okay. And anyway, I didn't realize this. Jane Weingartner sent out an email one day. She got her trailer fixed front to back over at Sally Van. And I thought, my God, that's such a great idea because they build their own trailers. They know trailers from hitch to ramp. So we took ours over there, our antique, you know, trailer, and they did a great job on it. They packed the wheels or whatever needed to be done. And now I find out they are working on diesel trucks, and by golly, I got one. So the guy's name is Ben Eversole. Just give him a call at Sally. They do a great job. He's a really nice guy, so I think that's kind of fun. Masterson Equestrian Trust has a new website, and it's wonderful. They can send you emails and all that good stuff, and they've already started a list of the shows. Spring Bay is April 6th. 7th, and then the Masterson Equestrian Trust benefit is the week after. I mean, you know, this is a good way to keep up with what's going on out there, because every so often they'll have things, cleanup day and stuff, because it's a park owned by the municipal park, whatever they call it. So, anyway, it's online. Horse Park, you can get your 2013 parking passes going. Let me think. Coming up soon is a Mounted Police Civilian Sensory Training Clinic, where you learn how to walk over big plastic pieces of stuff. It's very interesting.
Horses, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not afraid. Well, I'm yeah. One more week of Southern Lights. That's it.
Is that still on out there?
I think they're open today and tomorrow.
Is that right?
Maybe New Year's Eve, but not New Year's Day, and that's it.
Okay.
And then let's see what's coming up. a whole lot of nothing but Southern Lights. Now, February, the 1st of March.
My God, that's 6 months away.
I know. John Michael Montgomery's going to have a concert. You're not invited. Snowball Series Mounted Game starts, and so does Snowball Series Mounted Games. But what's the other one? The dressage thing. Snowbird Dressage is coming up, so check the horse park. Oh, McCauley Brothers is going to close to Monday at 3 o'clock. That's early because of New Year's Eve. So be sure you get your feed order in and all that stuff. It's 3 o'clock Monday. They're going to be closed. They're going to close up.
Got
now,
it?
Wait More? A minute. Wait, don't rush me. Rushing me again. There's some kind of rodeo coming up too. Go to kyhorseporkpark.com.
Horse pork?
Okay. That's for the cattle, for the kid. Okay. The bovine part. Okay.
All right. Let me take care of Ashford Stud here. Well, last Saturday at the fairgrounds, the Bonaparte Stakes was won by China, another solid runner sired by Taylor the Cat, bred in Kentucky by Totier Creek Farm and sold as a yearling for $100,000. China has finished 1, 2, 3 in 15 of his 18 starts. He's earned more than $271,000. Taylor the Cat is the sire of 21 2012 stakes horses, 8 of them stakes winners, 3 graded stakes winners. Lifetime, he has sired 87 stakes winners and nearly 200 stakes horses. He's ranked among the top 10 on the general sire list 4 times, and he has led the juvenile sire list. And the demand for his progeny is strong. He was the sire of 23 sales offerings to sell for $100,000 or more in 2012, including individuals for $550,000, $430,000, $385,000, $310,000. Taylor the Cat, a son of the great Storm Cat, stands at Coomore's Ashford Stud for $25,000 due when the foal stands a nurse. Ashford Stud is also the home of champion Sire Giants Causeway, who was represented by his 4th Grade 1 Stakes Winner of the Year, when Book Review, a 3-year-old filly bred by Gary and Mary West Stables, trained by Bob Baffert, won the Grade 1 La Brea Stakes opening day at Santa Anita. So for more information, call the farm, 859-873-7088, and check the website at coomore.com.
From the Toyota of Nicholasville studio, this is WLXG Lexington, ESPN, Sports Radio 1300.
Toyota Nicholasville, where price sells cars.
Creative Cause met and defeated the best of his crop. He gave Bodemeister 5 pounds, and he beat him. He defeated Union Rags and Paintner and Hanson and Doolihan and Gemologist. In fact, he defeated every horse he ever faced, and he earned over $1 million. And what a pedigree. Creative Cause is by a Grade 1 winner, millionaire, and champion sire. He's out of a Grade 1 winner, Grade 1 producer, and millionaire. Now throw in superb confirmation, and you have the total package. By champion sire Giants Causeway, Creative Cause is out of Dream of Summer, who you may recall defeated a Shadow in the Grade 1 Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park. You're invited to inspect Creative Cause at Mr. and Mrs. Brereton C. Jones Airdrie Stud, where he's to stand his first season at stud for $15,000 doing a full stands and nurses. See the website at airdriestud.com, and remember, the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit. All righty, well, we're starting the second hour of this mess, and I've got Dr. Mariah Shovick with me this morning. You want to get a little closer to that?
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Oh, well, you've got a nice, strong voice. Hey, I love it. She's down here from, are you from Boston originally, did right?
Yep, grew up in Boston and kind of went to school all over the East Coast and
all over the East Coast.
Yeah, yep, all over, travel all around. So, and now finally back at Root and Riddle, so very excited about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm getting ready to say that you're a new, one of the new reproductive vets.
Yep.
At, are you wearing your sleeve, by the way? I mean,
my room. No, I don't. It's, I don't have my gear on. I've got my vest on under here. But yeah, I'm joining Etta Brady Camp and Crystal Howard down in our reproduction department in ambulatory, and starting in January. I'm very excited to be back.
Starting in January.
Yep.
Back.
Yes. So I came down here after vet school for my internship under Dr. Riddle, and then another year as an associate. So I was here. We were both here for 2 years in 2008. Okay. 2010, which now, is wonderful.
I've forgotten your first name. I remember Schoberg.
Matt.
Matt, okay. Yeah. Well, my condolences, you know, Matt Howard over here. Oh, well, let me write it down or I'll forget it because I forget Ursula halfway through the show at my age. But your family was, you were born and raised in Boston.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. My parents, my dad's from a farm in New Jersey. My mom's from California, and they settled in Boston.
How'd that happen?
Yeah. School for my mom. So my mom went to medical school in Boston, and my dad was a trooper, and he was actually coaching rowing up in Boston under his coach. So it was a good location for both of them for what they were doing.
And, yeah. What college?
He coached Harvard University, their women's crew team. And he himself was training as well. He was on the 68 and 72 Olympic team for rowing. So he was up there training and rowing, and my mom and him were there and made their home there. And I loved growing up there. We grew up right in the city and right by the train tracks. And every summer we go down to my grandparents' farm, which I loved. So that's probably why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I got out of the city and loved it. So,
okay. What did they have on a farm?
They raised Shropshire sheep, and then it was about a 100-acre farm down in Princeton, New Jersey, and they had raised Shropshire sheep, and they had a couple horses, so I would rip around the property on horseback, and it was wonderful.
And just riding horses, or?
Yeah, just riding. Yeah. It was nothing formal or anything, but loved it. As a young girl, gives you a real love of the land and being outside, and I'm very happy to be doing what I'm doing. And I think a big part of that is probably because I was in the city and couldn't do it, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
And so this was how I got back into it.
Did you ever go to Suffolk Downs?
No, actually not. I did not. I know, growing up, my parents are kind of blown away by how I got into this, but I started I rode, you know, just English as a young girl, but then we couldn't afford the lessons because you had to get out of the city to do the riding. So it was basically on my grandparents' farm.
Yeah.
And then when I was in undergrad, I worked at Tufts Large Animal Hospital. So we'd get some of the racehorses that would come through. And Dr. Kirkerhead, there were a bunch of veterinarians up there. So that's when I really decided I wanted to be a horse vet, was getting that opportunity to work with them at that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great.
Where'd you go to college then?
I went to Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
So another East Coast city, but that's a neat town. They've got kind of the river runs through it, and beautiful, lots of arts, great people. It was fun. It was a fun. I went to St. Mark's, which is a small school out in Southborough, Mass. It's about 40 minutes west of the city. I went to 2 years of high school and public school, and then this was a boarding school. My parents had to get rid of me, so they had to send me. They had to send me away. They'd had it 2 years, and that was it.
They shipped her across the state.
is that where you found her?
No, I grew up in Minnesota, so we didn't meet until well after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you were going to college, but when you all met.
Right at, I just started vet school in Philadelphia.
Oh.
So, and that's where we met. We met through friends, through rowing.
Philadelphia.
Yes,
Philadelphia.
Which is a tough city. It's a great city, but it's tough.
Yeah, I imagine it is. What vet school was there, Dan?
That's University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I finished undergrad, and then I actually worked in Philadelphia at different animal hospitals, and then started up in 2008, and we met the spring of my first year of vet school.
Yeah. Where did y'all meet, Matt?
We met through mutual friends. So she had rowed in college, and I was there training as well.
Are you a rower?
Yep. I'm an engineer by education, and I work as an engineer now and have for the last 10 years, really. But after graduate school, I came out east to train, and she had rowed as well, so we had mutual friends through the rowing program. And
who'd you row for?
When I moved out east, I rowed for a club called Penn AC, or the Pennsylvania Athletic Club.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I made the U.S. national team. And
oh, good. Did you go in the Olympics?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The 2008 Beijing.
How in the world did you get into rowing?
From Minnesota.
Yeah.
There's a lot of water to spend time on in Minnesota. So,
Well, you got Elkhorn Creek here. Yeah, that's about right.
It's going to get shot going out there.
That's how you...
Yeah, I picked it up in college like most Americans do. You know, there's a couple...
Very spots. Few Americans do.
there's a couple... I think by it's very regular that rowers in the United States all come from different sports. They played in high school. They go to college. They realize that there's this odd sport where people are out in these racing canoes and are... really join out of a sense of curiosity. But I mean, I think I came to it that way and you know, I liked it. It's fun to be outside. I'm sure you guys have a great appreciation for that too. But I mean, it's
being outside, we do.
It's good to be able to be outside.
I'm not too strong in the rowing.
They're going forward on horseback. We're going backwards in a boat, so the view's a little different.
Well, you built like a basketball player. I didn't know that rowers were, you know, 7 feet tall.
It's all about leverage. So long arms, long legs, and, you know, it looks like a bunch of gangly guys out in a canoe.
Exactly.
That's not easy.
Was your father in the Olympics, too?
Yeah, yep. He was... He was in 68 and 72 games.
Okay.
And he told me, he said, do not row. He said, this is a bad sport.
But you did anyway.
Yeah, I fought him on it. You know, it was probably the only – I was just big, and I guess I was built for it. But my dad always said, don't do it. It is a dumb sport. You're going backwards. You can't see the competition. And the only way you know you're going faster is it hurts more. He said, play hockey, do something. So,
and he couldn't discourage you. You went anyway.
Yeah, you know, it was. I was just kind of a bruiser in all the other sports I did, but I didn't have a lot of the finesse. You know, they'd just tell me to go out and pin that girl or that, you know. So rowing I loved because I actually felt like I kind of – it was a good fit for me.
Well,
all sports, not so much.
you've got to have a little finesse now, fooling around with throttle hooks.
Right, know? Exactly, right. Exactly. Yep.
Let me take a break here. I got to pay some bills. Well, William was the number one ranked first crop weanling sales sire in 2011, when 13 sold for an average of $136,154. He's siring superb individuals. The Clips Award winner Blame won 7 stakes and earned over $4,368,000. He won 6 graded stakes, 3 grade 1, the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Whitney, the Stephen Foster. He descends from a sire line generally considered to be our greatest source of classic stamina. Arch, Chris S., Roberto, Hail to Reason. His dam is Libel, a stakes class daughter of outstanding sire Seeking a Goal by Mr. Prospector. His second dam is one of 155 stakes winners by the great Nijinsky II, and the female family has given it such great sires as Nureyev and Sadler's Wells. Blame stands for $30,000, doing a full stands of nurses at Claiborne Farm, the home also of Algorithms, Eddington, First Samurai, Flatter, Horse Greeley, Parading, Stroll, Trap Shot, and Warfront. Inquiries to Bernie Sams and see the website at ClaibornFarm.com. Well, Indian Creek has a consignment to Keena's January sale you can't afford to overlook. There's a stakes place winner of more than $134,000, and she's a half-sister to 3 stakes winners. 2 of them are graded stakes winners, and she's in fold to champion Blame. Then there's a stakes winner and graded stakes producer in fold to Arch, a young daughter of Sadler's Wells, a full sister to a graded stakes winner and half-sister to a champion. She's in fold to War Champ, a half-sister to a Broodmare of the Year in fold to Summerbird, and a stakes class producer in fold to Twirling Candy. And if you don't know Twirling Candy, you should. He won grade 1 stakes, set a new track record, Santa Anita, 7 furlongs and 1, 19 and 3, and he earned over $844,000. His first folds are due in 2013. Also to be found in Indian Creek consignment are yearlings by Blame Arch, Temple City and Tis Wonderful and Artie Schiller, and young broodmare prospects by Tappet and More Than Ready. The Indian Creek consignment is in Barn 14. They sell Tuesday, January 8th. Then go to Barn 39 to see Indian Creek's Thursday consignment. 3 stakes mares in fold of Cape Blanco, Pure Prize, and Haynesfield. A yearling colt by Pure Prize. A young broodmare prospects by Malibu Moon, Spritestown, Chapel Royal, Smoke Glacken, and Proud Citizen. Plus the stallion prospect Sal the Barber, a graded stakes winner by a Breeders' Cup Classic winner. All from Indian Creek, and remember, the number one place to ensure your purchases is with the Clay Ward Agency in Paris, Kentucky.
859-987-1861. Two names you can trust in the thoroughbred industry, the Clay Ward Agency and Indian Creek. Kodiak Cowboy was a champion sprinter, a former champion sprinter, currently ranks number one on the sire list in North America. There's no substitute for speed. Kodiak Cowboy had speed in abundance, posted 100 by in five different distances. He won the Grade 1 Vosburgh and the Grade 1 Carter and the Grade 1 Cigar Mile. He won graded stakes in Saratoga and Churchill Downs as a two-year-old, and he was by champion, well, was the champion two-year-old of his year in Canada. In fact, he won nine stakes, seven graded, and he earned over $1,663,000. So if you're looking for speed, take a good look at Kodiak Cowboy at Vinery. $6,500 due in the foal stands and nurses. Also standing at Vinery in 2013 are the Stallions. Congrats, More Than Ready, Pure Prize, and Street Hero. And if you're looking for a great agent to handle the sale of your yearlings in 2013, contact Derek McKenzie or Steve Castagnolo at Vinery. In 2012, 86% of the horses offered for sale by Vinery sold. The number at Vinery, Kentucky, is 859-455-9388, and see the website at vinery.com. Do get a little windy upon occasion. I am talking to Dr. Mariah Shobrick and her husband, Matt, and a couple of roars, R-O-W-E-R-S, not R-O-A-R-E-R-S, as would pertain to horses.
I'm trying not to make any noises.
Okay. So you went to Penn's?
Vet school, yep.
Yeah, Penn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then where'd you go after that, Mariah?
So I finished in 2008, and then Dr. Riddle was nice enough to have me as his intern down here.
Isn't he a nice guy?
Oh, my Lord.
You know, I've never met Dr. Rude. But I have met Dr. Riddle many times, and very fond of him. He was a nice guy.
They're wonderful. Yep. I was saying, you know, you work really closely with someone, and I worked with him for 2 years, and he is just an incredible human being. And it's a privilege to get to work with him again. It really is. Him and his family, wonderful. And
She wants a raise?
Yeah, that would be no. No, but it's, you know, it's neat. It's been great. I feel very fortunate. I've come across a lot of people that have just been great role models and really been helpful in trying to find the way to go, and Dr. Riddle's one of those. So.
Well, we have some really good vets here. Dr. Doug Byers on the show every Saturday. Have you ever met Doug?
I haven't. No, I know who he is, but I'm...
He's a legend.
He is a legend.
Yep, wonderful.
He's a great guy, and he's had some health problems this year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, you know...
He'll be here next week.
Anyway, so come by and meet him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
He's a great guy. So what? When you left here, where'd you go from?
So I did 2 years here with Rudin Riddle, and then went back up to Pennsylvania to do a residency at University of Pennsylvania in reproduction, so large animal reproduction, which is, even though I knew I wanted to specialize in horses, we had to treat llamas, cows, everything. So it was a wild 2 years. It was great. I loved it. You know, get to work with the vet students that are just learning how to do things. These are people that have never, you know, you send them out to get a horse and you think it's just common knowledge that you would latch the gate and you look out and there's 30 horses running around, you know.
Yeah, right.
And it was wild. It was really, really fun. And I loved it. So 2 years, so I did my internship and a year here in Kentucky, and then went back up to Pennsylvania for 2 years, and then am now back here with the Rudin Riddle group.
With the Rudin Riddle, huh?
Yep.
Well, it's a great outfit.
Yeah.
When I was coming up, though, it wasn't any Rudin Riddle. It was all Haggard Davidson McGee.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And I was privileged to know all three of those gentlemen.
Wonderful.
Yeah, they were fun. They were great guys. Dr. Haggard, he had more jokes. None of which can be repeated here.
But you got to have a sense of humor. It's important.
Well, Mark, you're an engineer, you say?
Yep. I am an environmental engineer, which means that we do a lot of cleanup of polluted sites, old manufacturing facilities.
Hey, you're welcome to clean some stalls up out here, you know.
We did notice the steaming pile of straw out in the barn, so, you know, we could potentially have a look at that later.
Well, now that's a different firm over there. They
they roll those things, the manure. They collect the manure and roll it, and they go to mushroom farms.
Yep, which we lived in Kennett Square,
Pennsylvania,
which is where all of that straw goes. So
is that right?
We actually, and Kennett Square is the mushroom capital of the world. So I mean, it's kind of fitting that they actually
that we're here. It's generated.
I think they. You know, they sell the grass about three or four different times as part of its life cycle, but, you know, it all turns up in our stomachs, so, as mushrooms.
Whoa! Whoa! That's one way to look at it.
Moving right along. have you been over to Matt's place?
Yeah.
Matt Howard's.
He just gave us a look. It's a great operation, and it was fascinating to see. You know, we walked through their farm and saw some of their weanlings, and then we went over to and saw the pool and the hot walker that's kind of over at it's Mill Iron. No, but
they train here too, by the way.
And it's great. That's always kind of been my fascination with it, is to see how they train them and the. You know, I think as
that's an athlete coming at in you,
and we try, you know, that we do similar type stuff where you kind of do the longer steady stuff. You do shorter burst work where it's higher speed and short distances.
Jack and I used to train, and we did some interval training.
Yeah.
You won't find much of that out here.
All right.
No, or anywhere.
Right.
Very time consuming.
Yeah.
You know, and. But we used to use heart rate monitors and things like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of these trainers right here still do.
Yeah, no, and there's many correlations between the two like that. The one big difference I think is that we spend a lot of time doing work that's all longer than our racing distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're racing 2 kilometers, you're out there training for 4 to 6 kilometers.
Yeah.
Where I think a lot of the horse work is all done, you're done at shorter distances building up to the race.
That's true. That's the way most of it traditionally is done. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So when do you actually start in down here now?
January 2nd is the official time, but yay! But
that would be Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's coming. It's right there. But yeah, we're excited. We're just excited to be here. And
are you going to travel with another one of vets, or do
Do
you know what farms you're going to or anything like that?
Dr. Etta Bredekamp and I will be working together pretty closely, initially just together working on the farms and clients that she already has. And we do a lot of stuff in-house, so embryo transfer or if people are having a stallion evaluated. And we'll sort of be tag-teaming those client, you know, whatever is coming in. And then as we get more clients, we probably will each hopefully have our own client base. But it's a good, you know, collaborative team sort of, because we both have to be able to come into the clinic and do more specialized stuff like freezing semen, which wouldn't necessarily be for the thoroughbreds, but the other breeds that we work with. So it's kind of a mix of things that we're doing. But initially we'll be sort of working together.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to Matt Howard over here, they raise a lot of quarter horses.
Right, right.
And he's forever going to the airport to get semen or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Strange place to
get it, exactly. We had a funny phone call last year where someone had misplaced a package of semen at the UPS, and I had to call in and ask for it. And I was trying to emphasize to him how important it was because it was from this very nice stallion in Germany. And I said, this is like if you had the last unicorn semen. I need you to find them.
Is that right?
They found it, but it was weird. I'm sure they were a little, it was pretty, they were, I don't know. So it's an odd thing that we do. We try not to talk about it too much.
Yeah, right.
My husband's, you know, when I did my residency, he said, you don't have to tell people exactly what it is you're doing. You know, try to be vague.
But on the flip side to that, she's always the popular one at cocktail parties because she's got all the good stories, right?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, my... there's not a lot of job, or there's not a lot of stories from my work that you know, we want to share at dinner with guests. But all of hers get to come out. So.
Have you visited many of the farms around here? Of course, I guess you got to see a lot of them while you were here before.
Yep. Actually, you know, the farms that we were Dr. Riddle's farms, I would do some of the work on them. And then Matt got to visit a lot more of the studs that, you know, would go in to actually get to see the stud farms that I didn't get as much of a chance to. But yeah, I've been in and out of quite a few here. I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's an amazing.
Now, when you were down here before, were you all married at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you were. Did you come down here with her too?
Yeah. So, she moved down in summer of 2008. And then the Beijing Olympics was in August 2008. So I came, she came down a few months beforehand. And then as soon as I got back, I drove down here and then we actually got married in October. So of that year, once I got down and we were then here for the 2 years.
You did you marry here?
No, we got married in Boston where she grew up.
Yeah. That's what I figured.
Yep.
You still row?
Jack, you won't know if he's still rowing.
We've got a rowing machine that's at home in our garage. But I've got my eye on some of the local water bodies to
Reservoir
see, if four. See if we can throw some rowing shells out there.
Bay Run. All right.
For
that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's some big lakes around here, you know.
All right. No, I've as we get into it, I'm sure I'll be out there. So.
Well, you'll be out there by yourself, I'm sure. You know, you're not going
to start.
We're going to put him in a bright orange jacket so no one takes him out.
Right. Unless you can talk Marana going with
him. Yeah, well, right.
But it's never too, you know, we can always start the Lexington Rowing Club, too. Slow progress.
Yeah, well.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Right. It's going to be hard competing for athletes with all the basketball players around here. So.
Well, that's the big thing here, you know. Yeah. Although I think we're going to get our
big game
upcoming here finally today.
Yeah.
Well. That has to happen sooner or later. I'm a big basketball fan.
You have a baby.
Everybody. Yeah. You have a child. A yeah.
We do. Yep. McPherson. I know it's quite a name. Look at the look. He's 16 months old and
say that first name again.
His name is McPherson. He's named after my grandfather, but we call him Mac. M-A-C.
Okay. Well, that I'd handle.
It's like Matt.
Okay.
But yeah, it was pretty funny because I was pregnant with him during my residency and I was in the Department of Reproduction, so I had a shirt that said Mariah Schnobrick. Reproduction, and then I was 8 months pregnant. So
she practiced. You practice what you preach.
Yeah, exactly. I said you could tell I'm committed to my job, but he was born up in Pennsylvania, and he's down here and loving it. He's ripping around in the yard and just having a blast. So,
oh my, okay. You live in the country, or you got a
We live north of Old Lemons Mill, on Mount Horeb.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're living now. We're in the process of finalizing everything, and we'll be local.
North. There used to be Jack and Edward Don Hollinsworth used to live out there.
Yeah,
you're close to the creek.
Yeah, yep. we're
there.
We're
you
right
are
right on it. Right. We're right there.
Okay, used to be a mill down there called Johnson's Mill, where we used to go swimming.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
We'll look for it.
Okay, I doubt if it's there now.
The land has changed.
Yeah, the land has changed. Yeah, you know. The glaciers
have melted. The mammoths are no longer.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you all go. I've got to do some other things around here. Do what, Jackie?
Tell him to come back and meet Doug.
Yeah, you got to come back and meet Doug. He's a great guy. You'll love him. And I do. He's a wonderful guy. He spent the last 2-3 months at Mayo Clinic.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a good place. That's up in Minnesota. Good.
Yeah, right. Good. Yeah. There you go.
Best place to be. So.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Kentucky is the best place.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
It's been fun talking to you. I'm glad I got to meet you.
Absolutely.
And you all behave yourselves, and I'll see you down at Elkhorn.
We'll see you.
I want to ask you now, if you're going to row now, do they have, what do you do? Just row a what?
We
call it a skull.
You can get a skull, yeah. They make them in all different sizes, singles, doubles, fours, eights. Like you said, I'd be probably rowing by myself. So be a single. You can own them yourself. You can be a part of a club where they're also owned, and you just kind of show up and pay a membership type thing. But yeah,
Yeah, you'll have to start your own club down here.
I'm going to be the first member.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
If you're on that creek, you may have place to row in spring.
Yeah.
When it's raining, yeah.
There you go.
Right through the pastures.
Yeah, I just wondered if that's the place is where the people that I used to know used to live down there. And it was, they, yeah. It had a lovely place. Any acreage with it?
Yeah, there's about eight.
That sounds eight like acres. The same place.
It could be.
On the left, going away from town.
Yep, it's just north of Lane's End Oak Tree. And
oh yeah,
just south of my account.
You got some pretty highfalutin neighbors there too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good people.
Maybe they roll.
You know? Maybe they.
All right.
We're going door to door looking for people. You know?
Yeah. Right. Well, you find most of the things that you're going to find around here. But boats, you know, they're going to have an outboard motor on there.
Right.
And about 10 fishing rods coming out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank
nice
you
to meet
so
your
much.
Families, too.
Yep. Yeah, of course.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, First Defense is the sire in his first crop of Dundonnell. Winner in Great Britain of the Grade 3 Acorn Stakes, second by head in the Grade 2 Champagne. And fourth of 14 in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Stakes, beating some two lengths in his only start in the USA. Dundonnell is one of eight first crop winners by First Defense, and six others have placed, and they're doing so at major tracks. Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, Delaware, Saratoga, Churchill Downs, in Great Britain, in Japan. First Defense broke his maiden as a two-year-old by 8 1/4 lengths at Belmont. Came into his own at 3 4. When he won the Grade 1 4-gold, the Grade 3 Jaipur Stakes, the Long Branch Breeders' Cup Stakes, ran second in the Grade 1 King's Bishop and the Grade 2 Alfred G. Vanderbilt. He had sensational speed. Sprinted 7 furlongs and 1:20 4 at Belmont, 1:21 2 at Saratoga, and 1:22 1 at Churchill. Unbridled Song, First Defense is out of Empire Maker's half-sister, Honest Lady, a Grade 1 stakes winner by Seattle Slough. Stands for 7,500 live foal at Judmont Farm, home also of Mizzen Mass, the only sire of two winners of Grade 1 Breeders' Cup races in 2012. Inquiries to Gerrit O'Rourke, Aaron Fry, and see the website at judmont.com. Well, Wednesday, December the 26th, two of the three stakes run on opening day at Santa Anita were won by horses raised on products from Macaulay Brothers. The Grade 1 Malibu Stakes was won by Jimmy Creed, a three-year-old colt bred by Stone Street Thoroughbred Holdings and sold as a yearling for $900,000 to Spendthrift Farm, incidentally. And the Grade 2 Sir Beaufort Stakes went to Silencio, raised at Haggard Farm for breeders Wertheimer and Freer. Then last weekend, the Blushing Cade Derby Stakes at the fairgrounds was won by Daisy Devine, a filly bred by Riley McDonald. Congratulations to all and Happy New Year from Macaulay Brothers, the first feed mill in the nation to produce products exclusively for the horse. The record of horses raised on Macaulay Brothers products gives solid testimony to the quality of those products. And as a longtime customer of Macaulay's, I can give a personal endorsement to the quality of the service they provide. Join the winning team. Call Mike Warren or David Longmire at 873-3333. Stop by the office at 111 Broadway in Versailles. Macaulay Brothers, where it's all about the horse.
When Jackie and I moved to Bourbon County, that was about 25 years ago, we checked around to see where we should go for our insurance needs. The name that kept coming up was the Hopewell Company. So we had a talk with Ted McLean at the Hopewell Company. We've been doing business with him ever since. And believe me, we've been more than satisfied. The Hopewell Company is an independent insurance agency. They don't work for an insurance company. They work for you. And they represent a carefully selected group of financially sound, reputable companies, so they are able to offer the best coverage at the most competitive price. The folks at Hopewell are prepared to provide you with a no-cost, no-obligation review and comparison of your insurance. The Hopewell Company in Paris, established in 1955 by Joe McLean, is a full-service insurance agency. Give them a call. 987-2347. Or better yet, stop by the office at 820 Main Street in Paris. They're nice people, and they do a great job for you.
I'm heading down the highway, happy here for a little time.
All righty, well, I've been reviewing the racing year 1957 and three-year-olds in 1957, and of course, the champion three-year-old that year was Bull Ruler. He was a dark bay colt. I remember him well. Foal in 1954 by Nash Rule out of the top race mare Disco
Miss Disco by Discovery, bred and owned by the Wheatley Stables and trained by Sonny Jim Fitzsevens. If you remember, the last two races as a two-year-old bowl ruler were miserable performances. He'd done very well up until that time. He won his first five starts, including the juvenile and the youthful stakes, one at Belmont, one at Jamaica. Then he went up to, and he won the futurity, beating Greek Game, Mr. Fred Hooper's very fast horse. Then in the Garden State Stakes, I don't know what the heck happened, but he finished 17th and got to be 24 lengths. Now, the race was won by Barbizon, son of Polynesian, who later went to stud down at Warner Jones's Hermitage Farm down in Goshen, Kentucky. It was a very good stud horse, by the way. Barbizon didn't, I think he ran two times and didn't win and got hurt as a three-year-old. But he was this win in the Garden State when he beat Federal Hill, son of Cosmic Bomb, a very fast horse, and Amarula. Well, I think Amarula was another Nash ruler. Anyway, he got beat 24. That win gave Barbizon the champion two-year-old. And then in his last start, Bull Ruler's last start, came in Jamaica in the Remsen, and he just was eased in that race. The show him being behind 19 lengths at the eighth pole, and then was eased. R. Carroll rode him that day. But he came back in January and won his first start down at Hialeah, won the Bahama Stakes pretty easily, ran 7/8 of a mile, 122 flat. And beat General Duke, and he was giving General Duke 10 pounds that day. Federal Hill ran third. Came right back and got beat ahead in the Everglades Stakes, won a mile and an eighth by General Duke. Of course, General Duke was going to be the favorite for the Derby, but he got sick, and he never raced again. That was that was not his last win, although he won the Florida Derby, General Duke did. I happened to see that race, by the way, down at Gulfstream Park. Just tells you a little bit of something about how old I am. then the Flamingo Stakes, Bull Ruler, was after the Everglades, and he won by a neck, beating General Duke and Iron Liege. Of course, Iron Liege was his stablemate. Another, he was a like General Duke. They were both bullies. Iron Liege, of course, went and won won the Derby when Gallant Man, when Shoemaker stood up on Gallant Man at the 16th pole, lost a little momentum there. Iron Liege won in a photo. Probably going to win it anyway. In the Florida Derby, which I'll tell you, that was run on the 30th of March, 1957. Old Ursula was right there and watched General Duke set a new American record, going a mile and an eighth, 146-4. And won by a length and a half. Bull Ruler ran second. Iron Liege ran third. In the Wood Memorial, Bull Ruler won by a nose, beating Gallant Man and Promised Land. I think Promised Land was by Palestinian. I'm guessing, but I think that's true. Then in the Derby, it was the only time, really, that during the year that Bull Ruler didn't finish 1-2-3, and he ran fourth in the Derby. They tried to rate him. R. Carroll was on him, and he couldn't rate this horse. And he kind of fought all the way, you know, and wore himself out before he could get there. And of course, that was Iron Liege, Gallant Man, and Round Table 1-2-3. He got beat. Bull Ruler got beat 5 3/4 lengths for all the money. Wasn't too much later, though. Just 9 days later, they put him back in an allowance race, and he won by length, going a mile in the 16th. He went to the Preakness and won, beat Iron Liege in inside track. Then in the Belmont, he had the lead early and then stopped and got beat 12 lengths by Gallant Man with inside track second, and Bull Ruler finished third. Came back into that was in June, of course, June the 15th, and then he didn't run again until September. And they put him in a handicap, overnight handicap, and he won by 5.5 lengths, beating Greek Game. And then he won the Jerome by 6, beating Bureaucracy. The Woodward Stakes, he finished third to Dedicate.
who was an older horse and gallant man. Then they went to the Vosburgh, and it sprinted 7/8 of a mile, 121 and 2, and won by 9 over Tick Tock and St. Armour. In the Queens County Handicap, he won by 2.5 lengths, beating Promised Land and Greek Spy. Then he went to the Benjamin Franklin Handicap at Garden State and did a little bit better this time at Garden State than he did as a two-year-old. As a matter of fact, he won the Benjamin Franklin Handicap by 12 lengths. He didn't beat much that day. Sarno was second. Jet Colonel were in third. And then in his final start as a three-year-old, he led all the way and won the Trenton Handicap at Garden State. And he won by 2.25 lengths, beating Gallant Man and Round Table. And that kind of sewed up the three-year-old championship farm. As a matter of fact, as a three-year-old, he ran 11 times and never finished worse than fourth. So that's why he got to be champion three-year-old. As you recall, he came back and was pretty good at four. We'll be dealing with him when we get into horses in 1958. But he did come back and win the Toboggan and the Carter Handicap, ran second in the Met Mile, won the Stymie, the Suburban, and the Monmouth Handicap. And then I think he was injured in his last start, which was the Brooklyn Handicap that Co-host won. Co-host, a son of Mahmoud. Of course, stood over at C.V. Whitney's farm, and co-hosts stood at Greentree when he went to stud. Sharpsburg was second in that day in the Brooklyn that day. And Sharpsburg, a son of Alibi, I'm pretty sure that's right. Third brother ran 30, was a Prince Quillo. But anyway, that's the story of Bull Ruler, three-year-old season. And let's see, where am I now? Did I talk too long? Story of my life. Mooston Fur was a sire of 13 foals in his first crop. 9 have started, 5 have won, 3 others have placed, and his 9 starters have won a place in 29 races, and one of them stakes place. So if you're looking for a reasonably priced sire that can put you in the winner's circle, consider Mooston Fur. He was a frequent visitor to the winner's circle himself. In fact, he won graded stakes at Keenan and Belmont Park. He won an allowance company down at Gulfstream, broke his maiden as a two-year-old at Aqueduct, and at the end of his career, he won a place in 9 stakes. All 9 were graded stakes, including the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Breeders' Cup Handicap, in which he was beaten less than 3/4 of a length. He also could do it all. He could run on dirt, grass, artificial. Danny did. He's sired by Unbridled. He's out of a daughter of the champion Height of Fashion, and Mooston Fur stands for $2,000 live foal at Shadwell Farm. $2,000. Now, that's a real bargain for you. Inquiries to Stallion Manager Ken Barnes, and see the website at shadwellfarm.com.
The American Produce Record CD-ROM is now in stock at FirstNet.com. The APR is packed with 50 years of North American broodmare production and race records, including statistics for all weather starts, the only product of its kind. The APR includes sales data since 1986, as well as maiden stats on 2- and 3-year-olds of this year. Pedigrees dating back to 1950, the American Produce Records from Bloodstock Research Information Services is a must for industry professionals. Order the APR today at bristnet.com or call 859-223-4444.
Well, first crop yearlings by U.S. Ranger sold for $234,000, $180,000. $170,000, $160,000, and $120,000. He stands for a fee of $5,000 due when the foal stands and nurses. Now, there's a nice margin of profit in a $5,000 stud fee and yearling selling for up to $234,000. Well, U.S. Ranger was undefeated at 2. He was a champion at 3. He was a champion again at 4. He won a place in 7 stakes while competing in France, Great Britain, Ireland, and the USA. At distances from 6 furlongs to 1/16. He is one of 202 stakes winners by the great sire, Danzig, a noted sire of such sires as Dane Hill, Warfront, Hardspun. His dam is a daughter of the superior sire, Red Ransom, sire of 112 stakes winners. And she is a 3/4 sister to Dinah Farmer, sire of 136 stakes winners. It's a fantastic sire family. U.S. Ranger was bred to 146 mares in 2012. Breeders like what they see in U.S. Ranger and in his first foals. Stands at Windstar Farm, That's the home also of Distorted Humor, sire of Jimmy Creed, winning opening day at Santa Anita of the Grade 1 Malibu Stakes. And Jimmy Creed is one of 14 Grade 1 Stakes winners, sired by the top sire, Distorted Humor. Inquiries now to Jerry Duffy, Leanna Packard, or Chance Tim over at Windstar Farm, 859-873-1717, and see the website at windstarfarm.com. All righty, well, I've got a little time here to read something of Joe Palmer wrote back in the 1940s and early 50s from his book, This Was Racing. These are all excerpts, so, from columns that he wrote. And this was called Vice Triumphant. The same mail brought a notice of a new motion picture named Under My Skin, presumably about racing, and a copy of a violent protest by the National Steeplechase and Hunt Association to the producers of this movie, on the ground that it represented steeplechase riders as crooked. To a man who has seen a good many racing movies, there was no great point to reading all the way through either the notice or the protest. This department will never see Under My Skin, having given up Jack Straws, lettered blocks, the movies, and all drinks containing grenadine in that order. But I wonder if racing isn't a little oversensitive about the way it's handled in Hollywood. There's no question it's handled badly. The question is whether anyone should mind. What isn't? The triumph of virtue over vice is the only serious plot known to the motion picture industry, or at least it was when I used to see William S. Hart discouraging the rustling of cattle, a Francis X. Bushman getting cut down on the stretch turn of by Raymond Navarro and Ben Hur. If the movies have learned anything since, I think I would have heard about it. It isn't as if other professions fared any better. I seem to remember, as through a mist, a picture called The Strange Island of Dr. Monroe with Charles Laughton. And for that matter, there was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Both of them dealt with physicians who had gone wrong. But I doubt if the American Medical Society would have been justified in a protest that they portrayed the profession in a bad light. Consider the way the newspaper profession is delineated in the movies. I can't remember seeing a movie reporter who wasn't dissolute, irresponsible, and brilliant. Yet I know a good many who are merely dissolute and irresponsible. The point is that there are only a few ways to complicate a racing story. Think of what a picture would be if it tried to show how Warren Wright won the Triple Crown with Citation by spending all kinds of money on yearlings, by buying broodmares at expensive prices, and paying any kind of price for the best trainer in the country. It would lack drama, wouldn't it? There has to be a villain. A few very gifted writers have managed racing stories without evil influences in the key race. John Tanner Foote did it in The Look of Eagles, a sentimental and yet appealing story. J.P. McQuarrie wrote my favorite racing story of them all, an item named What's It Get You? And, of course, there was National Velvet, which got even into the movies without much damage. Personally, I've seen only one fixed race, one that I know was fixed beforehand, that is. That was a steeplechase down in Maryland a few years ago, and even in that, virtue triumphed. There was an eagle bird in the race. You ought to know what an eagle bird is, but if you don't, it's an unfixed horse in a fixed race. This one was in the hands of a trainer who wouldn't stand for monkey business, and he was ridden by a jockey who was smart enough not to bet the rest of his life against an afternoon's game. The horse had bad knees, so the race was fixed without him, on the theory that he couldn't win anyway. Well, the fix was going good up to the last fence, but there the eagle bird, bad knees and all, scrambled over on even terms and beat the elected horse in the flat run to the finish. The jockey on the fix was suspended that afternoon, and a little later racing officials, in conjunction with police, set a trap which caught the rest of the voters, and they're now down for life. So much for fixes. If we could get the same percentage of honesty in the legislature or in Congress that we do in Jamaica, we'd have a government against which the ways of communism would break unavailingly. There was another side to this, too. A prominent official once remarked, "If we could convince everybody that this game is on the level, we'd go out of business." It was said facetiously, but the man knew what he was talking about. There will be, lining up at the windows all this season, a considerable number of citizens who hope the fourth race has been tampered with and that they're in on the right side of it. There is also the question of unemployment, not serious during the war, but of growing importance now. A quite responsible number of not very respectable persons made a living selling larceny, and you would be surprised to know how many reputable businessmen can be separated from actual cash at the sight of a battery which will never appear on any racetrack, but is represented as being the causative agent for an upset victory in Charlestown. Well, if some people weren't persuaded, how would our hustlers live? That's Joe Palmer. I remember when I first started doing this show, how long ago was that? Lord, I hate to think about it. Anyway, I had an old-time jockey who used to ride in the bushes, and I was interviewing him, and I was taped to interview at that time, and he was talking about a race that he was in one of these bush tracks, and I'll refrain from mentioning the name of the track because it's still running. But anyway, they were loading him into the gate, and the state stewards came driving up and hopped out of the car, and he says, "Now, I know you guys are carrying batteries, and I want every damn one of them now, or you'll be ruled off for life." And he says, "Well, it felt like thud, thud, thud," is all I could hear was the batteries hitting the ground up and down the starting gate through there, you know. And I said, "Well," I says, "yeah, that must have been quite an experience." He said, "Yeah." I says, "How did you run in the race?" He says, "Hell, I won. I didn't throw mine away." Oh, well, such is racing. I was, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Medaglia d'Oro has sired 8 Grade 1 stakes winners, including a horse of the year. One of the 8 is Warrior's Reward, described by True Nix as the fastest son of Medaglia d'Oro. Warrior's Reward sprinted 7 furlongs and won 21 and change at 3 different tracks, at Churchill Downs, at Aqueduct, and Gulfstream Park. He won the Grade 1 Carter Handicap and won 21 and 3, then he won a place in 6 graded stakes at distances from 6 furlongs to a mile and an eighth at the major eastern tracks, Saratoga, Belmont, Keeneland, Churchill Downs, Aqueduct. He posted a 113 buyer as a 3-year-old. That was the fastest buyer of the year for his age group, along with Quality Road and I Want Revenge. The first foals by Warrior's Reward will be yearlings in 2013, and he has the numbers in his favor. He was bred to 352 mares in his first 2 seasons at stud. Stands a spendthrift farm, so keep in mind that all 3 of the spendthrift sires with first crops to race in 2012, Into Mischief, Notional, and Tis Wonderful, have sired first crop stakes winners. Warrior's Reward, if I can say it, stands for $15,000 due in the foal stands and nurses. Inquiries to Ken Wilkins, Des Dempsey, Sean Fell, Mark Toothacker, or Ned Toffey at 859-294-0030. And see the website at spendthriftfarm.com. All righty. Let's see if I can find a short one in here, maybe to read. I got about 6 minutes. My man, Ressie, over here tells me. Yeah, that looks like a little long. I know.
That's a small one.
Best chicken fight I ever saw. Here we undertake a man mid-course in narrative. It was down in West Virginia. We had a fight going, and it was raided by some local police under the direction of the SPCA. There weren't any chickens actually fighting when they broke in, and, of course, the bets were all oral, so they couldn't find any grounds for holding us. They just took the birds. Next morning, we didn't have the usual problem of getting people out of jail. We just had to get the chickens out. So another fellow and I went down to see about it. It turned out the SPCA had dumped all the cocks, 35 or 40 of them, in the same pen. It was dark, and they found some good place to roost, and they went to sleep. But then a roar stood a tiptoe on the eastern hills, and a ray of sunlight went into the pen. The first chicken that waked up saw another cock next to him and promptly jumped on his head. And after that, one thing led to another. When we got there, there was a scene described usually as indescribable confusion. There was blood on the floor until it was slippery. About 4 feet above the melee, there was a tumbling mass of feathers rising and falling like the top of a fountain. What cocks were still alive were still going at it. It was the finest battle royal I ever saw, concluded the man, and was perfectly legal. The SPCA had staged it right there in the county jail. I don't know where he came up with all these stories.
Oh, that's funny.
But, you know, how many of them you can believe is another thing, you know, because he never let the truth stand in the way of a good story. And I think he described that here very aptly when he wrote that Joe wrote that this department had a reputation for unswerving truthfulness until approximately the age of 7 and would no doubt have it still, except for leaving Kentucky temporarily at that age. But then there are various things. Since then, various things have happened, and now a certain admiration is felt for a well-told falsehood. This is wrong, of course, but there you are. I love Joe Palmer's writing.
Yeah, me too.
I really do. All right, let's see. Let's look at the winners that come out of here. We're going to put this up on the internet, I guess, today, Jackie.
Yes. UrselEllisHorseTales.com.
Yeah.
I'll probably get real antsy in that middle of that game and go out and put the show up.
I'm not expecting a whole lot.
I just tried.
What about you, Ressy? What do you think?
We're
going to
win by 4.
Ressy says Kentucky by 4.
Oh.
Ressy is the eternal optimist.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, since last week's show, we have had 12 winners out of the Thoroughbred Center. All but one at Turfway, and that one was it down at the fairgrounds. Greg Birchall, who trains out here, sent a really nice filly named Brilliant Autumn down and won a nice allowance race down at the fairgrounds. So congratulations to Greg. Other winners were saddled by Gary Skinner. I Must Be Perfect was the name of that. He won all these at Turfway now. Kellen Gorder saddled Heavenly Light. Brian Michael, Don't Surprise Me. Robert Sturgeon, Bobby here. Bobby Sturgeon, Go RV Go. Laura Bilmer, Bandy's Go. Alan Krupper sent Swiss Royalty down and won. Luis Jurado won with Seamstress. Wayne Mogi with Heart of Class. John Booker with In My Book. Luis Jurado won with Why Bother Me. This was yesterday, and he just brought in all kinds of donuts for us to eat. And thank you, Luis. Luis, good trainer. He does very well. We've got a bunch of good trainers out here. And last night also, Byron G. Scooter Hughes, better known as the progeny of Gail and Ruth Hughes.
That's right.
His daddy, Gail, was with Forest Retreat for many, many years. And
his mother had a pack of foxhounds.
Yeah, and his mother used to run a hunt down there. And Susie Shirtlett, who is breaking in as the new clocker here, I'm retiring. Except I come in on Saturdays and help out, and then Susie's going to have to go into the hospital for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to fill in for her, but it's about time for me to hang it up. And anyway, I'm going to miss it, but there you go. All good things come to an end. I want to wish everyone a Happy New Year, and we're on at the regular time next week from 10 until noon. And Jackie, you got anything you want to say? Well, the show is, you know, it's streamed live. I know that. You can. Well, what else can you get it?
WLXG.com.
Yeah, you can listen to it on that.
And anywhere around the world, and I'm sure the people in China are just up at the whatever the time it is there, waiting at their Philco.
There you go. Well, anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Happy New Year.
Again, happy birthday.